This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Where do you think we will be in terms of EV charging to the ratio of EVs on the road? What it would be like a Goldilocks setting?
Our current thinking is maybe about 1:5. So one charger to support 5 EVs. Reason being because of the mileage that we have. So average driver drives about 50 click a day. So you only need to charge maybe once every 5 days a week. That's how the 1:5 came out.
Welcome to COE Watch. My name is Li Nianzhou. I report on transport news at The Straits Times. Today, we're looking at electric vehicles, or EVs. Now, more EVs are being registered each year, and this aligns with the government's objective to improve emissions from land transport. There are 13,000 electric cars in Singapore as at the end of February in 2024, and more are being registered every month. Now, to power these EVs, literally, we need chargers. To tell us how we will get to have EV chargers exactly where we need them, I have Mr. Derek Tan, the CEO of EV Electric, which is a company set up by the Land Transport Authority for that very purpose. Hello, Derek.
Thanks, Nianzhou. Thanks for inviting us. So I'm Derek, CEO of EVE. So EVE is short for EV Electric. We are a subsidiary of LTA. So we are actually a private limited. So we will sit in an interesting space. And the reason being for this is that it's new territory, new frontier, and we wanted to have a nimble company that can actually do the work, which is related to all things EV infrastructure related, public infrastructure. And because things are so uncertain, so having a subsidiary can still continue to achieve the national objectives, but doing it in a nimble, agile fashion while making sure that we are financially disciplined. And if you ask private sector to do public infrastructure work, that's quite a no-no. Unlikely that people will want to put in a lot of money where there's no demand up front and then to wait for demand to come on board. So that's quite difficult, which is actually what we are trying to do. So right now, what you will see is that private operators will have gone into all the shopping malls, and that's fine. But you will find that it is quite difficult for them to go into the public car parks. The reason that is public infrastructure. No private sector would want to invest that kind of money upfront when there's no demand yet. So that's the gap that we fill while making that national objective and do it in a fast way.
But you're not in the business of actually putting in chargers that consumers with electric vehicles, with EVs can plug in, right? Those, they're don't fall into what you do.
Oh no, that does. So we do two parts. We plan the chargers. So we work with our partners. Right now, we have 5 on board, the Shell, Charge Plus, Singapore Mobility, and so forth. These are our partners, and they plan the chargers. But we dictate where the public car parks that we want them to put in. And then thereafter, we will also upgrade the electrical infrastructure that provides the power source to power these chargers. So the charge point operators, if there's no power, they will not go in. But we will pay for the infrastructure upgrades so that they can then deploy their chargers. We are not profit maximizers, but we need to be above the line. It must be financially sustainable. So we cannot suffer losses, but we're not out to maximize profits.
Okay, that's interesting because just the answer on maximizing profit or any profit at all, I think the question that's lingering is there's so many charging points, but not that many electric vehicles, and there'll be times when these chargers will literally be sitting idle.
Yes.
Right? That's like at the opposite of making money, right?
Exactly. Which is why if you leave it to the private sector, they will not go in. And we recognize that this is a chicken and egg problem. Consumers out there would say that if I don't see a charging point, why should I switch? But we want them to switch because it's a cleaner option and it's all in aim to meet cleaner emissions and cleaner national objectives. So it's really to tackle a chicken and egg problem, something that private sector alone cannot achieve, so which is why we fill this gap in between. We achieve the national objectives, but doing it in a faster, nimbler manner.
So let's talk about speed, faster and nimbler, right? I did a bit of checks and we said that to date we have something like 3,000-something charging points in Singapore. How many of them were deployed in 2023 and how many will come by 2024, by the end of 2024?
So maybe I break it into a more layman manner. So our target is within 3 years, we are going to deploy chargers at almost all HDB car parks. So that comes up to be about close to 2,000 car parks. We've already achieved that in 2023, one third of it. So that comes up to be close to about 700 car parks. Baseline is about 3 chargers each. Actually, all HDB towns, you will see chargers in some of your car parks. That comes up to be a one third. So for the remaining 2 years in 24 and 25, we'll be completing the remaining two thirds. So we're talking about 700 car parks today. And then the remaining about the remaining 1,000 odd car parks will come in the next 2 years.
But in terms of speed, right? Because the first 700, I imagine that all that gaps that you're talking about, processes and unknowns now are slightly better known. Will we then be looking at deployment being faster? Meaning, so it took you a year to get 700, for example, you'd be faster than 700 or more than 700 in 2024, or will it actually be slowing down?
It will actually not so straightforward. Reason because not all car parks are homogenous. So all things being equal, multi-story car parks that has sufficient power, very fast. Before we started, the process could take a few months. After we've ironed out the kinks, the processes, approving authorities, we managed to cut down the process from an average of about 20 weeks initially to less than 10. So we cut it down by about more than 50%. So that's the easy ones. And actually, we've already finished all of those. The remaining ones are actually more your surface car parks, about 1,000. About half the HDB stock are actually surface car parks. Those are more tricky. Just because you have to do trenching works, you have to find where's the appropriate power source. And that in itself, just the works alone, even if the car park has power, it takes longer. Just because you need to dig, you need to do all sorts of works. Then if there's no power, you need to figure out where to draw the power from. So therefore, it's much trickier.
Mm-hmm.
Then
you have weather. So this is the infrastructure part that you are filling
in? Not infrastructure part yet.
Not yet.
Just to deploy chargers. This is where the car park has enough power to deploy 3 to 12 chargers.
Okay.
Right. Just even to do that takes much longer than a standard multi-story car park.
So although you save time in the paperwork, to put it very simply, you're actually going to spend more time in the digging.
In the works. In the digging works. And in the finding where's the most appropriate power source.
Mm. So coming back to the question, then it would suggest that 2024-25, the pace will actually slow down a little bit.
Not so much slow down.
Effectively.
So we are still going to hit that one-third, one-third. Mm-hmm. So basically, we have 3 years to achieve all, right? So our target is to do one-third. But there'll be some overlaps. Initially, it will definitely be slower. But we will actually have to backload some of them because we need to iron out a lot of these kinks and some of these issues need to be resolved before we can really, really ramp up. So it's not so much a straight line and I can't accelerate it because it is a different environment altogether.
So when you say backload, you mean that maybe there's a bit of a not a lull, but a slowdown before it bounces back.
Yes. So we might see a dip now just because more works are required, more time is required. Then once we get all those up, you will start to see more coming maybe towards year end, early 2025. And then that's where you'll see the main wave coming.
Interesting. Because how does that pan out with your discussions with the charge point operators? Because they will be either raring to go or, no, you're going too fast for me. How do you coordinate or layers with them to get their buy-in?
Oh, the charge point operators, when they tender, they know that within 3 years, this is the number of charging points they need to set up. So they would have already factored all of these. And for us, it's to working with them to work out site constraints, issues that they face. Then we'll see maybe this car park push back, this car park can put forward and so forth.
Because overall, you would have studied, like, so in a given, say, housing estate, let's narrow it down. Housing estate, and go like, okay, there are maybe, 100 possible parking spots or potential spaces. Are there times when you go, you know, on paper, we thought location A is great. And then when you go down and you realize actually there is there's this, that, and other impediment.
All the time, which is why it is not so straightforward. It's not like it's not a factory. It's not, oh, you can wrap a McDonald's burger and this is how it's going to be done. No, every site is actually, even you think about, it's just a car park, right?
Yeah.
But actually every car park is different. And you look at HDB design, over the years, designs have changed. And when the estates were first built, it was never with the intention of having EV charging.
Yeah.
So the power source may not be where is the most optimal. there may also be not enough power source, and then some of the lots may also be closer to residents. Then we have to consider all these, whether is it externalities or things, and then on paper it might seem okay, but when you go down on site, then you realize that, oh, actually you can't do this. For example, if you were to plant a charger along a certain number of lots, then you realize, hey, what if the charging gun, the cable runs across the pavement? Then there's a tripping hazard. So then we will shift where we relocate the chargers. But if you want to do this relocation, then say, hey, but my power source is there. If I shift it that way, I'm much further. It means that I jack up costs also for the charge point operators. Then charge point operators will be like, I can't bear this cost. Suddenly, it's instead of trenching 100 meters, you ask me to trench half a kilometer, 500 meters is it's no go. So these are some of the practical.
How would you overcome then if really from a couple of meters to half a kilometer?
Then we really need to re-examine, is there a closer one? Or can we switch spots? Something, and then we have to find, is there an alternative power source that can do so? And we try to mitigate. So we are a bit like an arbitrator or broker. We need to go from site to site, trying to balance all the needs. So from the authorities, whether it's HDB, town council, the residents, the charge point operator, the motorists themselves, which are the most suitable lots. And also at this juncture, chicken and egg. We have more petrol car users than there are EV users. So they will always feel that they don't want their lots to be touched.
Have you reached a stage where you, especially for public car parks, I mean, we understand that if this was a situation for condominiums and MCST, of course, those having the combustion engine cars will be like, no, up in arms, no chargers in my hood. But for public housing and public parking, where are you hearing from the motorists? I mean, you just put it there, the motorists go, oh no, I just lost my lot, too bad.
So we need to balance this. So as you know, multi-story car parks, right? And you can tell, Singapore quite interesting, red lots.
Yes.
We have red lots, and they're always at the lower few floors.
Yes, the good lots.
Yeah, the good lots. So if I were to plant an EV charger lot, I face a lot of resistance. People will push back.
Yeah.
Interestingly, if I put a lot near a lift, also pushback.
Yep.
So we decided to go with a middle ground. Okay. In the first instance, most multi-story car parks are about five, six stories. So we took the middle ground, third level.
Literally the middle,
third level. Right?
Okay.
So that's where you almost don't have red lots, right? And that's where we find that people from both sides are accepting. For EV drivers, it's not that bad to drive up third deck. Mm. And for the season holders, it's okay. I see them on the third deck. I don't feel that they're competing with me as much.
Okay. So then on this point on putting these chargers at the middle of the building, right? What is the utilization data telling you? Like, are people starting to use it? They're being deployed? How well deployed are they?
So we've seen although it's still early days, but data has been very, very encouraging. People tell us chicken and egg, right? If I don't see, I won't switch.
Yes.
So now that we've deployed for a while, and the data shows us that after about 6 months, when people see that there are chargers, we actually see people make the switch. So from maybe 6 months of really idling assets, nobody going to charge, we start to see, after 6 months, utilization went up. And over a year, the utilization trends upwards. So we've seen that quite consistently across quite a number of car parks. So the more that people see that there are chargers available in their estates, they start to be more assured that they can make the cleaner switch.
But can you tell what kind of vehicles are they? Is what I also want to know. Because yes, you have in 6 months' time, just that I happen to be in the area, I go to my app, there's one here. So just overall, in the past, given that the business has been running for just over a year, right? You have more vehicles are sold anyway. So are you sure this is a signal that you're encouraging people to switch, or just that, I need it and then I happen to be in the area?
Not so much, though it's not transient. So what we've seen is that 60% of the charging takes place overnight, which is what we want to see actually. So when we rolled this out, it was with the intention that, because it's residential, so it's most convenient to do this overnight. And therefore, you do not need a lot of fast charging. Slow charging is better for the car overall. And also better for the grid. You don't have such intense power output, and I can plant more slow chargers. And because it's residential, it's fine unless you work shifts and whatnot. But otherwise, overnight charging is the most convenient. And it works with your lifestyle. You go home, you leave your car there, charge overnight, and the next day it's ready to go. And we've seen that 60% of charging takes place overnight. And I think also post-COVID, people have more flexible work arrangements. We are also interesting to see that 40% of charging takes place during the day, which is also a good thing. Actually, when we factored this, we were prepared that in the day, if nobody charges, it's okay. But with 40% of people charging during the day, which means that it could be transient, it is not a bad thing either. But we are quite happy that majority of charging takes place overnight, which is the intention.
So on this point of overnight charging, here I want to find out whether there are any insights, any hacks to this, right? Is the fact that now the overnight chargers, they tend to be about 7.4 kilowatt. These are relatively slow chargers. There are slow ones out there, but this is quite slow. For somebody who is coming in from the habit of a combustion engine car, this thing takes, 5 hours, 6 hours to charge up an average electric vehicle.
Yep.
But on the other hand, when speaking to the experts and all, when we're doing our reporting about EVs, is one behavior, one commonly cited behavior is that EV owners don't charge when the battery drops to zero anyway.
Yep.
So assuming it's half, then if it takes, instead of 5 hours, it takes you 2.5 hours, then how do you do overnight charging then? So there are a lot of time, a big chunk of time is actually the thing is plugged in, but it's not working, right? Mm. Is that correct?
Mm. Yes, that is possible. So there are two parts. One is if you really want to work it into your lifestyle versus going to a petrol kiosk. To go to a petrol kiosk, you actually need to make an effort. It's a detour. Go to a petrol kiosk, fill it up, 5-10 minutes, then go home. Now you can skip this step. You go home, you just plug in, you leave it, next day you go. Of course, the concern is then if my battery is like 60-70%, do I do that? Then of course, we want to discourage such behavior for when you do overnight. If your battery is so high, there's no need to do overnight charging.
Yeah.
Right? You should do overnight charging when your battery is a bit more depleted. Now, we're not going to be so prescriptive to say that, you can only do overnight charging if your battery is near zero. I think nobody would do that. It's just that you charge your phone. You do want some assurances. And people have different risk levels, right? 50% to me, I feel very risky. I want to do overnight charging. That's fine with us. So long as you do it responsibly, and in the day you shift your car and you don't deprive others of doing it, fine, well. But where we maybe draw a line a bit more is if, hey, you're already at 70%. You only got 10% to charge and you hog the lot for the whole night. Then that's where I think we'll come after and discourage this kind of behavior.
How would you discourage it though?
So we could do it in a few ways. Pricing could be one. Hogging fees could be one.
This is hogging fees, yeah.
Hogging
idle charge, right?
Yeah. Or maybe even a minimum charge. So knowing that, if you are at 75% and then you just want to make sure that you have that 5% and you charge overnight, then I will maybe impose a minimum charge. Then it makes it painful for you to want to do that.
As a minimum cost to pay.
Minimum cost to him. So for example, minimally you might have to charge your battery at least 20% charge fee, for example.
Okay.
Then that means that, if I'm at 75, it doesn't make sense for me to do so because I'll be paying for a 20% charge when I'm only getting 5%, something like that.
How do you imagine? Okay, so I guess that's data that you get from the charging service operators, right? They know that this charge, he's been there for 5 hours, but he only paid me $5 because it was very little, minimal charge. But how do you actually police it? Because at the end, the next person being deprived, he's being deprived. You need to police and get that vehicle off. It's not so much as just paying a fine, because the person might say, you know what? I got money, I'm going to pay. Right. How would you actually extract that vehicle? Whose jurisdiction, by whose power and by whose tow truck are you going to do that?
So we're not going the line of that hardcore enforcement. I'm not going to have a whole fleet of tow trucks to do that. I think this is going to be an ongoing process. And what we're hoping to do is to really cultivate good practice, responsible practice. And we're all adults. We believe that everybody can be socially responsible. What we'll have maybe is penalties, but for very more serious offences, like for example your petrol car parking in a lot, your EV car parking in the lot but not charging at all. So those are the outright serious offences. But for lot hogging or for depriving others of use, there'll be other mechanisms that will do so. And hopefully through that, even if you have a lot of money, I don't think the majority will behave like that. And with enough of those kind of calibrated deterrences or nudging behavior, and we can also call you out. Right? We could also go up, because we have the data of the motorists. Mm. We could also share with you, hey, what has been your charging behavior? And then maybe we can nudge you towards, hey, why don't you charge at certain times? On this also, we also think that we need to get more information out to users. Then they can make a more informed decision. So a bit like if you were to go Google Maps today, you want to look at your restaurants and see whether is it a busy time and so forth. We also want to be able to make this information available. So people don't have to be so concerned that do I have to compete and fight for a charger? Or when is the most off-peak or peak periods of charging? And I can then make my decisions accordingly. Maybe at the start, it might seem like a lot of work to do. It's a bit like creating a new habit.
Okay.
Once you know a bit more of these, and such information is readily available, easily understood, I think it can make your life a bit more easier, more convenient. You know, your routine, you can fit that into your routine, into your favorite charging spots and so forth. That's what we hope to facilitate.
So here we're not talking about having real-time availability sort of information, right? You're just saying that based on, if you were using the example of restaurants and all that, so it's just averaged out, aggregated?
Combination of both. So we hope to be able to give people real-time information as well. You'll be able to see whether a charger is available right now. And also based on historical data, what are the chances that this is a peak period?
How far are we from getting that real-time data? I understand that on the MyTransport, there's supposed to be some connectivity, but still you have operators that are not on board, as pun intended, but they don't give data.
Oh, okay. So with the EVCA, I mean, that's the Charging Act.
Yes.
All this data would have to be given to LTA. So I think that's towards the end of the year, all of this requirements will be in place. So given the systems that need to be developed and so forth, I think optimistically we're looking towards the end of the year, early next year, we should be able to make progressively more of such information more readily available.
Okay, on this Charging Act, I personally, when I started reporting about it, when it was first announced, when it first read the bill, one of those things that stood out was the, besides the requirement for real-time availability, real-time data on the chargers, is also how there is a need for operators to allow users to pay other than having to have stored value, you know, all kinds of membership schemes, as it were. So I thought that was pretty interesting. How do you envisage that will actually be rolled out in the next couple of months until the end of 2024? Because this will be part and parcel of complying to the rules. How would that happen?
The onus is then on the various operators to figure out. So basically, it has to be a non-app payment option. And this is to enable consumers to have the choice. I don't have to download so many apps.
Yes.
I have an option to pay outside the app. I give an analogy. Today, a lot of you go restaurants, you scan a QR code, you find the menu, you order online, and then you pay. You could either pay using PayNow, or you pay using your credit card. Some require you to key in your credit card. Some go straight to your Apple, Google Pay, and so forth. That's probably the similar direction that we are going, whereby you can initiate a charge, and then you pay similarly. Whereby you use whether it's PayNow or a credit card to do so. That means so a bit like a dining experience,
yeah,
but for EV charging.
So it's possible that by this year, possible that we can, if we were in an unfamiliar area, public charging, and it's a different operator that I don't have a membership with, I can scan a QR,
absolutely,
fill in whatever it
absolutely
is and pay.
Absolutely. So that's the intention. Now, whether or not by end of the year, all of them will be that, maybe not yet.
Why not? They're supposed to comply to the rules.
They're supposed to comply by the rules, yes.
Because you have 12 months, I think, for the rule to completely
come
into force.
So when they fully comply, I can't remember the exact dates, but yes, but whatever that the law says that they must comply, they'll comply.
Yeah, they have to, right?
They have to comply. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the just to be clear that it isn't about having a point of sale system where I can go and tap a credit card.
You could do that too, but that's just more costly.
Yes, that sounds expensive,
yeah,
right?
Because then they need to buy the hardware, they need to install hardware at every station.
Yes.
So likely the solution will be a software one, similar to what you see at the restaurants.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, we are in a sense that charging is really on the supply side of things, right? I mean, we're putting the chargers and everything. We're having this conversation on the back of like the world seems to be falling out of love with EVs. At least, you know, the whole of the beginning part of 2024 is news of, oh, Tesla has recorded a year-on-year drop. Wow, that's record. Chinese EV is not going as fast as we expect and all that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there are more and more Chinese brands, EV brands, well, mostly from China, that are making inroads into Singapore, giving introduced new models and all that. Where do you think we will be in terms of EV charging, so your part of the business or the network, to the ratio of EVs on the road? What it would be like a Goldilocks setting? Mm. Not too much, not too few.
Mm, mm. Our current thinking is maybe about 1:5. So one charger to support 5 EVs.
And these are just public chargers that we're public talking chargers, about. You still have your chargers. Private ones in your yes. offices and condominiums.
Yes. Yes. So excluding all those. So those, you have additional options. But yes. for public, we are thinking about 1:5.
And this 1:5, we already seen from very early on, we talk about overnight charging at home-based multi-story car parks. But I understand that we also have fast chargers that are being introduced. There are quite a couple being committed as well, right? Mm. Mm. So this will all figure into that 1:5?
No, thereabouts. The 1:5 is really for overnight. Reason being because of the mileage that we have. So average driver drives about 50 click a day. So you technically, you only need to charge maybe once every 5 days a week. So then therefore, that's how the 1:5 came out. Yeah, but for fast chargers, that's different. Now, fast charging also tackles not your average motorist, but really more your taxi drivers, your fleet drivers, your delivery guys.
So heavy users.
Heavy users. So those, we don't really have a Goldilocks number as yet. It is still something that we're trying to figure out because we need to balance cost. Fast chargers are much more costlier to put in. It is more stressful on the grid. Not all places are suitable as yet. And we also do not know what is the actual take-up going to be like. So we are monitoring this. But for now, the strategy is to have wide enough coverage, which is why I think earlier this year, they announced that we'll be going to about 60 public car parks to do so. Mm-hmm. And that's the intention, to give similar to how we are doing with that broad-based blanket coverage for residential charging.
So it's still, in terms of for this fast charger or DC chargers, it's kind of more like a touch and feel still getting a sense of
yes.
things.
Yes.
How does that, because this is I guess it's important for so many reasons, right? Commercial vehicles or heavy users will be naturally the one that would make the most emissions.
Yes.
So getting them off the IC and moving to EV sounds like a great idea.
Yes.
But where do you think, I know this is still early days, but where do you think your role is in terms of this publicly accessible fast chargers versus whatever private or restricted use chargers out there? How do you think that you'll be like a 50-50 in terms of importance, or still got to depend more on their own, they got to sort themselves out more?
I think it's, I won't really say 50-50, but definitely a shared one. Mm. We do know that different businesses have different requirements. So if you're ultra heavy user, then if you can, by all means, and if you do want to set up your own infrastructure, invest, by all means, go ahead. But for public one, for us, we are quite targeted. We are really targeting people who depend on it for livelihood, especially your taxi drivers, your fleet drivers, your point-to-point drivers. These are the ones that we want to take care of, and we think that it's an important role to play. Also because publicly accessible car parks comes with amenities, cheaper parking, and we think this is the targeted group that we do want to help out. If left to their own devices, they may not have that access. Yeah. Maybe taxis, you have your own depots, but if you're a point-to-point driver, you might not have that. Yeah. So that's something that we feel that it's an important role to play. There's a public good to this.
Mm. Okay. Now, let's come to the fun part. I'd like to ask, assuming I have the power, to give you 3 wishes to do something to do with what Eve is involved with. What do you think will really help to further the cause? 3 wishes. Maybe it's about certain more models or certain technology you're looking forward to. What will you be looking at?
I think top of my wish would be advancement in technology that requires less power, but yet can give me more charges. I give you an analogy, lighting bulbs. Before the days of energy saving bulbs, we had, you know, if you put out 15 watts, you will get 15 watts, right? But then came the era of energy saving bulbs, right? I give you 5 watts equivalent, but you can draw less power, but you can pump out more.
Okay.
Then came the LEDs.
Yeah.
Right. So if I had my wish, I want something along those lines. I want an energy saving type of a charger. I want an LED equivalent of chargers.
And this is only on this we are talking about the chargers being just smarter, like being able to amplify whatever comes from the grid.
Yes. So if I can, if I'm able to draw if I have limited power, how can I amplify that and push out more output? That will be my number one wish, because that would then allow us to deploy more nimbly, more with fewer constraints, because power source is the main constraint. It's also the most expensive constraint.
Have you seen such things in the horizon already?
Yes, some. So one of these is smart charging, whereby you use software, but this actually just dynamically reallocates power.
Yes, I understand that's already been deployed. That's used now, yeah. Deployed.
But the downside is that sometimes the user experience might be compromised.
Mm.
So you may not always be assured that you will get that if I leave it there for 1 hour, this is the amount of power I'm definitely going to get.
Mm, just because that if we use there's a pipeline that coming in where I have 10 units of something. Now that there are 3 vehicles, you split it up into 3 rather than 1 vehicle getting all in full speed.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Another wish? Second one?
Second one, really, I think easier way to make that switch for people, you know, is really creating a new habit. How can we make it more convenient for people and not so daunting? Right now, there are a lot of thinking about, I need to do so many things before I even make the switch. It is so difficult. I wish that there was some way that we could make it, it is just so easy. It is as easy as going to the petrol kiosk for you.
Okay, so this is on the demand side, where what are the difficult things then you're thinking about? What do you think are like real hindrances for the user to make the switch, a motorist?
I think when it's something so unfamiliar, people have a lot of fears. Range anxiety. I might not have enough power to power my car. If I go to somewhere, the charger is not working, then my car is dead in the water.
Mm.
Or I have to think about when is there log hogging fees and so forth. And increasingly, a lot of this is its own self-help. Today, you go to a petrol kiosk, the uncle helps you. But here, you have to help yourself, in a way, self-service. So that can be quite daunting to people. So I do wish that there is a just plug, charge and go that makes it so easy for people to not even have to worry so much about
but
this.
But to tackle this worry is about knowledge, right?
Both knowledge.
If they know that one, range anxiety, I know that I'm not going to be anxious because I know there'll be range. I also know that the charger will be available. There's a certain standard of quality, right? I mean, we read elsewhere overseas where if you're to do a trip across a road trip, maybe half the charger they thought were available are not.
Mm.
So it's about knowledge, right? That we can empower them. So this is quite doable, right?
A bit about both knowledge, but even then, to make it easy for people to grasp, I think that is a big challenge today. Today, if you go around asking, a lot of the petrol drivers might have a lot of misconceptions, even though a lot of knowledge is already out there available.
Mm-hmm.
But people still have quite a lot of misconceptions about EVs.
Like, what would be those things that you think is really to the detriment of adoption? What's holding them back? Electrocution?
Safety, yes. I think safety is one. Mm-hmm. Safety is one. The other one is the availability of charging. And there are also things like, if I were to cross the causeway and there's a 7-hour jam, will my car could be completely wiped out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So stuff like that.
Okay, so that this one sounds almost, I mean, plausible, can be done.
Mm.
One more.
Cheaper.
much cheaper
upgrades for infrastructure. So if we do need to upgrade our electrical infrastructure, there's a cheaper, better way of doing that.
Where's the main part of the cost now?
The main part of the cost is when you are a premise owner and you need to upgrade, say, your switch rooms, your substations. Yeah. So is there a more effective, cheaper way doing so? So it's similar to my first wish.
Yeah.
The first wish is at the charger side. So linked to this is
now we go upstream.
Upstream is on the electrical upgrade side.
Mm. Again, then similar to the first wish, are there things in the horizon that's developing maybe outside of our borders where you see that infrastructure upgrades, switch rooms and all that, there are more efficient, more cost-effective ways to do it?
Today, I don't see that. People are developing alternatives, but they're not cheap.
Mm.
For example, instead of upgrading the, say, substation, they choose a slightly cheaper alternative, which is maybe a battery unit.
Mm.
So
this is an energy storage system that kind of bolster or augment the supply.
So you augment with, say, solar, and then you put it into a generator, but it's a battery generator. But these are also not cheap currently. So if that becomes viable in the longer term, just like how we've seen solar costs coming down, then that may be an alternative to having to do, a substation upgrade.
I see. But this cost thing, when you talk about cost for the business, is always about the runway, right? You can make money next year or you wait 2 years or 3 years. Do you think that this might be something that will also solve itself as operators get into the groove for longer? You know, that they've been operating for so many years. The initial, yes, we don't make much, and then now we're starting to see the returns.
So we do see that operators are unlikely to do the back-end infrastructure upgrades. That's just too costly. They can't survive.
Okay.
Even though if there's even more demand and money on table in the future, maybe. But today, we can't see that happening, which is why we come in, because this is a heavy investment that we do, and then we have a much longer runway to recover.
Mm, okay, good point. I guess that leaves one more question from my side, which is still on the function of cost, right? Is we talk about adoption of people in petrol-powered cars and then going to electric. And then electric tariffs have also been on the up. Do you think that there will be a time where you're going to see the cost of a petrol vehicle, I mean, on a per kilometre basis, where then we'll reach parity now? Because now it seems that electric is a little bit lower, but you have the high initial cost and the inconvenience. Do you think that we'll come to that point?
I think that's the intended end state.
Who's intending this?
not intended, but I think that's a desired, sorry.
Mm.
The desired end state is that there should be parity. And of course, right now, the disparity is because of the higher upfront cost for EVs. So all things being equal, we envisage and we hope that it will reach parity, whether is it an EV or petrol car.
So you're saying that the initial cost of the EV
has to come down.
Ideally, it should come down.
Yes.
So that you have this, because on a per kilometer basis, it would seem that the EV has an edge.
Yes.
No, because the tariff is lower.
So if you just compare electric tariff versus petrol cost, of course, EV has an edge. But if you factor in the overall total cost, which includes the cost of the EV today, then we haven't reached parity yet.
Mm.
For some models, maybe yes. I think that gap is closing. But we do hope that there will be indeed parity, or even EVs can become, it's a total cost basis, be cheaper than petrol.
Yeah,
then you'll be really, really
very
attractive.
Few reasons not to change, right?
Yes, yes. And we hope to see that, because it is a cleaner version and it's better for the environment overall.
Mm, okay, great. Thank you very much for your time, Derek.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Right, speak again soon. Well, that's a wrap for COE Watch, a podcast by The Straits Times. I'm your host, Lee Nianzhou. If you resonate with the points raised, do share this podcast episode with your friends and family. If you would like to read more of my transport articles, there is a link in the podcast show notes. Thanks for listening.
Send your feedback to podcast@sph.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.